Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Poor, and my guest today is David Swanson. And David is a noted writer, and he's a radio personality, and he's going to talk to me about the importance of community radio. Thank you, David, for being part of this radio show. So you write for, are you a freelance writer?
I am, yes.
And you write for several publications. I've seen your work on Counterpunch and on Common Dreams. So have you been doing this for a while?
I've been doing journalism for many, many years. I've been doing activism and advocacy writing for many years. Yes, I used to be focused more on domestic issues, labor and poverty and racism. And for many years now, I've been focused mostly on peace and anti-war.
Okay. So you probably, I don't know how far back you go, but I'm sure that you were involved in George Bush's Gulf War, right?
Well, at the time of the first Gulf War, I was living in New York City, and I did protest at the United Nations, but I was not working for any activist organization or doing any real journalism of any sort at that time. That was early in my life.
Okay, so from journalism, you started doing radio, right?
Well, I've been a guest on many people's radio shows for many years. For a little while, I was a regular weekly guest on Tom Hartman's radio show, and about 9 years ago, I took over a show that a woman named Donna Smith had been doing a great job with and already had up and running on many stations, called Talk Nation Radio. And I've recently changed the name to Talk World Radio, but it's airing on many stations and podcast outlets and on the internet.
So I'm sure you enjoy doing radio, right?
Oh, I enjoy it very much. I have a half hour show a week, and because I have so many other things in my life, that's enough for me. But I sometimes I have two guests and do 14 minutes each. Usually I have one guest for 28 minutes, and that allows me to get into their story in a little bit of detail and ask some follow-up questions based on where the conversation goes. And really learn more about a topic, and sometimes have a bit of a debate with a position I don't understand or disagree with, and it's pretty interesting and apparently pretty informative for other people as well.
So most people, or a lot of people, I should say, get their news and commentary from the mainstream media, the corporate media, but you don't go that route, right?
Well, I look at the corporate media. I don't watch television news, but I read corporate newspaper articles, and I look at videos when people send them to me online. In part because there are always great articles, even in the worst outlets, and in part to know what other people are hearing, so that I can make some sense out of what they're saying. I work on war and peace, right? I see a survey, a Gallup poll from around the world where the majority of people in most countries say the U.S. government is the biggest threat to peace in the world. And I want to know, why did people in the U.S. say that Iran is the biggest threat to peace in the world? You know, because if I'm just studying the issues and I see that Iran is spending 1% what the U.S. is spending on its military, has zero foreign bases, zero ships, you know, hasn't started any wars, I want to understand, I have to look at corporate media to grasp why it is that some, you know, seemingly sane person would be convinced that that Iran is a threat to them.
And what do you think that is? Because the corporate media, that's their whole thing. That's what they talk about. People listen and they believe it, right?
The corporate media on some topics has gotten worse and worse instead of better in recent years. On certain sorts of bigotry, of racism, and particularly Black Lives Matter issues, the corporate media has gotten dramatically better. And I think it's a credit to the activist movement, the protesters, the advocates on gay rights as well. But on questions of war and peace, where you have, you know, interviewers demanding that Joe Biden call Vladimir Putin a killer who has no soul and so forth, it's gotten really, really bad. And a lot of the assertions are presented in the corporate media very rapidly with no reference to any evidence, and then are just assumed as fact and discussed millions and millions of times, so that the notion of questioning them is outside of anyone's experience. So a lot of the Russiagate allegations, the accusations of chemical weapons use by the Syrian government, the accusations of nuclear weapons development by Iran and so forth, these things are presented through the corporate media as established fact that you'd have to be insane to question. Whereas if you question them in the independent media, you know, there isn't actually any evidence behind them. So you're sort of living in a very different world. But you have to know what's happening in the corporate media to make sense of what people are talking about.
Okay, so as far as, like, the independent radio, meaning Pacifica more or less, what percentage of the people would you say are aware of Pacifica community radio? And more importantly, how many people do you think that know that they could get their voices out and talk about their passions through community radio? Would you say that's a small percentage of the population?
Yeah, I'm sorry I haven't looked up the numbers. I wish I had, but it's clearly still a very small percentage. I think it's added to by access to these radio shows on the internet and through distributors of podcasts. It's augmented by social media, people getting their stories and their videos, including Black Lives Matter videos, out through social media. It's added to by independent reporters and websites like you mentioned, Counterpunch, Common Dreams, Truthout, Gray Zone, etc., that do their own reporting and pull together and promote articles that are otherwise being overlooked. But it's still relatively small, and you still have a huge percentage of the U.S. public depending on U.S. corporate media, which, you know, very often is disastrous and creates false impressions and leaves important stories out altogether.
Which is by design, right?
Oh, very, very clearly by design. I mean, I haven't been on you know, cable news in the United States in years. You know, I go on MSNBC or CNN and I speak against U.S. war making, U.S. militarism, and I'm never heard from again. And it's not because I was incoherent or misinformed or, you know, looked too hideous. It's because those views are not wanted. You cannot say certain things on U.S. corporate media that you can say on independent media or media from some foreign country. Foreign countries, which for the most part you can't say, you know, you can't criticize their governments on their media either. You have to come back to the U.S. media to criticize their governments. But it's, you know, it's a real problem. You look at all these mass shootings. I do all this research on the role played by U.S. military veterans in mass shootings. Over 36%, probably much higher, of U.S. mass shootings are committed by people trained to shoot by the U.S. military. And you can't say that. Not a single U.S. media outlet has touched that story with any statistics or any report whatsoever. It's just a forbidden topic, right? And a lot of it is partisanship. In the U.S. corporate media outlets, you got to be cheering for Biden or cheering for Trump. If you're criticizing the two of them, if you're criticizing Biden from the left, you know, well, you know, forget it. So, you know, and sometimes it's outright censorship. I mean, the stories about Biden's son's laptop and Ukraine were openly censored and forbidden because that was unacceptable.
Wow. Wow. So do you think that – I know there's so many other ways of getting your message out through social media, through podcasting. From your perspective, even though you and I both agree that there's a it's important for community radio to keep going, do you see a future for community radio?
As far as I know, it hasn't shrunk, it hasn't shriveled away. It's at least maintaining, okay, if not growing, in its reach, and I certainly hope that continues. I think more and more people, and the polling reflects this, are increasingly skeptical of corporate media outlets. The question is whether they can be brought to engage with and learn from and listen to and participate in community radio and independent radio. I know that some people do because I get feedback on my radio shows that are played on these radio stations. I know they reach a lot of people. I hope they can reach more and more. And I think, you know, if current trends continue with the corporate media, it's increasingly likely. I certainly hope, right? I mean, you saw some things that were actually positive from my perspective when Trump was president, precisely because of how awful he was. It became possible in the corporate media to call the president a liar, to say, you know, the Trump administration lied as follows. And I was hoping that sort of you know, journalism that takes on established power would continue once Trump was out of the White House. And of course it didn't. It's, you know, that's gone. You haven't heard a word to that effect since Trump left the White House. But you know, if you don't identify with the Democratic Party and sign on with blaming Russia for everything, and you don't identify with the Republican Party and sign on with blaming China for everything, and you have a different perspective, then you're one type of person. There are many who may want to look elsewhere, and community radio is hugely valuable.
I totally agree. And the reason I learned about it, I started podcasting, and I ran into a friend who said that there was a community radio station that's going to start, and I started going to the meetings, and that's how I got on community radio. But basically, I mean, people know about podcasting, but they don't know about community radio. How do you think people can learn about it?
I don't know. You know, without huge advertising budgets, it has to be word of mouth. I think social media helps. It may help that my radio show is an example. Talk World Radio is an example of a show that's on all the podcast outlets, but also, you know, mentions the community radio stations at the close of every show, so people understand that it's also being heard on these stations that they could go and learn about. I think it's also one of the things that's valuable about independent radio and other independent media is that they can generate enough attention, and social media can help, that stories can be forced into the corporate media against the will of the corporate media. When something becomes big enough on social media and through community radio and independent media outlets, it can become a story in the so-called mainstream media, and to the extent that those media outlets can ever be brought to give credit to where a story actually came from, it can make more people aware of where this journalism is going on.
Now, give us an example. Give us one example of what you just said.
Well, you know, one place I work is rootsaction.org, and one thing we've done in the past couple of months is take on some of the very worst of the nominees for high office in Washington, D.C. So people like Neera Tanden and Rahm Emanuel and Michelle Flournoy, there was nothing welcoming about from the corporate media to campaigns to block the nomination of Michelle Flournoy for Secretary of so-called Defense, on the grounds that she was ideologically too war crazy. And yet, after numerous, not just radio shows, but radio stations and YouTube shows that have huge viewers on the internet watching the videos of their shows, and other independent media outlets and prominent stories on those websites like Common Dreams, Truth Out, Counterpunch, after all of that was happening, then you saw, you know, reporting in the corporate media, the biggest, you know, newspapers out there and TV, on the fact that there's this movement to oppose Michelle Flournoy. So, my memory is not the best, but there are, you know, countless similar examples. It does happen.
Now, what kind of stuff do you write about? You say War and Peace. Give us a couple of examples.
One statement that Roots Action wrote just recently was objecting precisely to something I mentioned a minute ago, that is the President of the United States calling the President of Russia a killer and a man with no soul and so forth. And Roots Action put out a statement objecting to that sort of reckless rhetoric, creating hostility between the two countries that have 90% of the nuclear weapons on Earth. And that was picked up by primarily by independent media outlets and by Russian media outlets, and was covered as a big story in Russia. And the foreign minister of Russia talked about it and so forth. And it was encouraging to the Russian government that there were people in the United States who weren't against the United States, who were, you know, normal U.S. citizens, who nonetheless wanted their president to not call foreign leaders names and create hostility. So that's one topic, but I write about, you know, all things related to war and peace. So something good that just happened this weekend out of the Biden administration, they finally ended the sanctions that Trump had put on the International Criminal Court. And so while you're traipsing around the world bombing places in the name of democracy and the rule of law and the rule-based order and so forth, to have imposed sanctions on the top officials of the International Criminal Court is just outrageous. And we, World Beyond War and Roots Action and others, had been demanding for months now that that be ended. But of course, when they ended it, the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, put out a statement expressing his hostility to the International Criminal Court, the desire for the United States to go on violating laws outside of any jurisdiction of any courts and so forth. And so I wrote this weekend a little about how it was a very good thing that they had finally lifted these sanctions. But then to be continuing through other more subtle means to try to undermine the rule of law internationally was less than helpful. So all topics related to weapons deals and military bases and wars are my usual area of writing these days.
You know, what you said a couple of minutes ago was very interesting, because whenever they have like a mass shooting, you know, they stop all programming and they just talk about that. But you just said that a good percentage of mass shooters are from the military. So
right.
If that's the case, you know, you'll hear like a shooting and 2 days later, the media forgets all about it. So that's interesting that you said a good percentage of mass shooters are, you know, they're military people. So how do you get that message out? That's a very important message, because it goes on and on and on and on, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon, and people are losing their lives.
Yeah, it's, you know, there is some reporting on patterns in these mass shootings. You know, you can find media reports about how virtually every mass shooter is male. There are almost no women doing this, and that's important,
right,
and relevant. You should know that. You can find reporting on how many have a history of mental health problems, how many have a history of sexual abuse of women, how many had very easy access to getting outrageously deadly weapons, you know, and how gun restrictions are needed. You can find all sorts of good, relevant reporting on factors that are probably of important interest. But if mass shooters were disproportionately redheaded or left-handed or vegetarian, we would know it, you know. Instead, a very disproportionate number of them have been trained in mass shooting by the U.S. military at public expense. The most relevant possible factor, there's no question that it isn't relevant, whether it's causation or correlation, you can investigate, but it's clearly relevant, and that's forbidden. You cannot mention it. If you take the mass shooters that are male and that are within a certain age group and you compare them to the general population, where about 14% are military veterans, at least 36% are military veterans, so over twice, and maybe more. Those are just the mass shooters that I've been able to find out were veterans. Many I just don't know if they're veterans or not, and so it may be higher than 36%. But I think it's important to know how many people are being trained and conditioned and armed to kill by the U.S. military at public expense, and what sort of culture they live in on foreign bases and in foreign occupations and in foreign wars. and what they bring home with them from those illegal, immoral, and unnecessary experiences. You know, that ought to be relevant. And the notion that, well, if you say that, if you mention that, you'll be creating a bias, a prejudice against veterans is absolutely ridiculous when, you know, when the majority are still non-veterans, when you're talking about a teeny tiny percentage of veterans, and nobody's worried about creating a prejudice against men or gun owners or mental health, people suffering from mental health problems. There's not a, you know, there's not a sign of worry that anybody's creating a prejudice against any of these groups. It's only if you mention veterans that, oh my God, you'll create a prejudice against them. You can't, you know, this news is forbidden.
Well, you only have a couple of minutes left, and I want to ask you this question because I think it's really important. You know, whenever there's a mass shooting and, you know, there's talk about the NRA. The NRA is knowledgeable about the fact that a good percentage of the people doing these shootings are from the military, wouldn't you say?
I would have to assume so if they've looked at the same information I have, but I can't tell you for sure. I can tell you that the NRA produces videos promoting war, that the NRA produces YouTube videos celebrating people buying guns and pretending to take part in wars in their backyards and pretending to shoot foreigners. So the NRA is a fan of war because the NRA thinks wars sell guns, and the NRA is probably right about that.
Mm-hmm. So we just have about a minute left. If people want to know more about you, know about your writing or about your radio shows, how can they do so?
You can find Talk World Radio at talkworldradio.org, which is part of my website, davidswanson.org. And a couple of places I work that we've mentioned are worldbeyondwar.org and rootsaction.org.
David, thank you so much for being on All Exits Closed. I hope maybe in the future we can talk again. You've been listening to David Swanson. This is All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. David, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.